You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the first ever episode 226 of the Kind of Funny Games Cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Hello.
And making a return after what feels like forever.
Yeah.
Andrea.
Oh, Ryan. What's good,
Welcome
guys?
Back,
what's good?
Hey, thanks.
You can find her on What's Good Games. You already knew that. YouTube.com/What's Good Games. And then over here, FM3 himself, the best hair in the business. Woo! Oh, and it's looking extra shiny today. That was good. That was good. Fran, where can people find you?
You can catch me on Twitch.tv/FM3_. Mm-hmm. One day I'll get the three characters. Or on the Epic Store, my creator code is simply Fran Mirabella. And thank you for supporting me and helping me do this.
I love it. I love it so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Kind of Funny Games Cast each and every week right here on YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together, talk about video games, all things we love about them. And there's a lot to talk about today because we just got back from E3. And this is the first time we've all been together to talk about E3 and our E3 adventures.
We all ended our solo films and now the Avengers have reassembled.
This is it. This is definitely that.
Yeah, this is like Infinity War today, maybe.
Patreon supporters at the Silver membership or above get to watch the show live as we record it. You can get the show 3 days early and get the full exclusive pre and post shows. Today's thrilling content in the pre-show.
Yeah.
Fran was talking about how much he does push-ups in the morning.
No.
Well, technically, the answer was zero, but
ish.
Still.
But I don't, anyway.
You have to go check
oil,
that out. There was a lot of truffle conversation.
Yeah. Poisoning.
Mm-hmm. We ran the gamut there. Shout out to our Patreon producers for this month, Daniel Massey and James Hastings, making all of this magic happen. If you don't want to do any of that, it's fine. You can watch the show on Mondays on YouTube.com/KindOfFunnyGames or RoosterTeeth.com or just search for Kind of Funny Games Cast on your favorite podcast service. We're sponsored by Zebit and Upstart, but we will talk about that later. Let's just get right into it. Last week, 2 weeks ago, actually, we were right here at this table. We did some E3 predictions.
Oh, God.
Andy! It's time. It's time for you to come sit here on the shock mic.
Oh yeah,
Andrew,
I want to know.
Busy.
Yes. I mean, like, there's a lot of different scores out there. I want you to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but are there any that you win?
Yeah, I've seen.
No, but there's one where I'm second place, which I appreciate.
Oh, I thought all of them are.
There's a couple where I'm third, but
maybe not. Maybe not this one. Kev, can you bring it up, please?
How do we just not? Can we just go? Well, we don't have a record.
We're not going through the whole thing, but C_Anon on Reddit made this, and the final scores, I am the winner with 3.9, then Fran with 2.1, then Greg with 1.8, Andy with 1.3, and then Barrett with just 0.3.
So what is
and
this
you feel
out
you can
of?
Trust these scores based on
out of 10?
Because I saw another one I was
yikes,
last place.
This is what happens when I'm not on the prediction show?
Yeah.
3.9 is the best you can do?
Well, remember, the thing is that it's not a, you can get the partial points,
right,
which is where it's getting so bad, where it's not out of, it's like out of a million or whatever, mm-hmm, in terms of what you're going to break it down to.
Yeah.
But when we're breaking it down, the key things I like is that he added all of this editorialization
sure
here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Most comments/additions to other predictions from me, which I definitely buy. That makes a lot of sense. Fran with the most ridiculed correct prediction with the Breath of the Wild sequel. I thought you were crazy,
baby.
Oh
that
my
was
god!
Huge. I couldn't
when it
believe
happened, it was just like Fran gets the point. What?
That was a huge one.
Gotta love it. Greg with the most accurate with his comments/additions to other predictions,
fixing everybody else's predictions.
And then Andy with the worst prediction ever.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know,
with
opinions.
Perfectly
you know
dark.
So Andrea, so I predicted that Doug Bowser would announce Perfect Dark, and you know usually we always wear a shirt, like a special, and I said he'd be wearing a perfectly dark shirt, which like come on, that's genius,
it's
guys. I get this company
for the taking,
gold, Andrea.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I don't appreciate
keep
you
keep your shit to KFAF. All right?
And then Barrett with the best dream come true moment with the Bikini Bottom remastered
definitely
prediction.
Definitely did not see that coming.
Oh my god, so great! You gotta love it.
I feel
you
like
gotta
that
love
was
it.
The most ridiculed correct prediction. Actually,
well,
it was.
Well,
yeah,
it was
I'm
YouTube.
Sorry.
I mean, it was only YouTube.
I was Flabbergasted. I was, dude. Hey, and I'm happy that I will never forget that moment, though. We were here at 6 damn a.m. for the Pokemon Direct. We did that thing, and then Kevin left. Everyone left. It was just me and Barrett here. And I look at my Twitter as I'm making the thumbnail for the Pokemon thing, and I see SpongeBob come up, and I'm like, oh no. I was like, Barrett, get in here right now. He came in and I just started recording and then he saw it. Like, at any other time, we would have not got that reaction video.
I came into the back room and then Tim stopped me coming into the back room. I was like, what's happening?
It's like,
and I knew something was like announced or something because you're being weird. And the first thing that popped in my head was Batman got leaked or something.
Yeah, like he totally expected it to be Batman or Harry Potter and it was fucking SpongeBob.
Which was still just as hype for me and it was fucking awesome.
It's huge, man.
You gotta love it. But Greg, what other predictions points have you seen?
There's someone else that did tweet one where I was at number two, and I was hoping you'd pull that.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to tell you that. It's kind of like, you know, I wanted you to find the light on your own because I didn't want to look like I'm trying to stuff the ballot box here. You know, make myself.
Yeah, I saw one where I was in last place. I was like, I don't know how these things work.
Can you scroll down so I can see the rest?
Yeah, you never actually read the scores yet, did you, Tim?
I read the scores.
Oh, you did?
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, let's see what this one says.
Yeah, I found the one that I think you're talking about, Greg, here from BJ Bernardo.
Okay.
And all he said was fourth place Andy, third place Fran, second place Greg, first place Tim.
And it's that thing where I've just always heard that BJ Bernardo gets it right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that this is fake news.
We got tweeted one like 3 days ago where I was beating Fran, and I saw that, and I was like, I don't think that's true, but I'll go with it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know how it works. Whatever you guys tell me, I'll believe.
I don't think there's a way it works.
Yeah. Can't we just listen through it again and be like, yeah, that was right, that was
you
wrong.
Can. You can. You can go to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and go for over there. That's what they did.
I'll take second place, though, Tim.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
This is really good with the notes and the additions and the comments and the results and everything.
Let me ask you this.
Who thought Bethesda was going to take a shot at Anthem?
Me. I did. That was my
honorable mention. What? Seriously?
Well, if it was with the Fallout 76
thing.
Not directly. I thought they'd make some little like snide comment about it.
No. But they Bethesda's better than that. They wouldn't do that.
They did. It was in the vein of Fallout 76, right? And they did self-deprecate about it. So you kind of
I was right on all
that.
It was the Anthem thing I tossed in there. I think it's flavor and didn't get.
Yeah, and our predictions with our Magic 8-Ball show, we had guessed that Pete Hines would say we fucked up on stage, like verbatim, and then he didn't. I was bummed.
That would be a big one.
He tapped his leg for us, though.
He did.
We have investors, it's hard to say stuff like that.
I don't even know what my point three was.
That's true.
Did you see it?
No.
Yeah, we call him. Annually, we call him every pre-show. Like 10 minutes before they go live, we call Pete Hines and he answers every time. And we give him a pep talk, and then it was, cool. We were just wondering if when you go out tonight, you can tap your leg for us. And really? He's like, I'll try. I don't know, guys. I'll try. And sure enough, he went up and went. When he went off stage, he texted me, tap the leg.
That's awesome.
How did your predictions go?
Our predictions went pretty good. Britt, we're going to go over all the scores tonight on tonight's episode that we're recording. But ours is just more for funsies because we ask questions to a Magic 8-Ball. So it's not like we make specific predictions like you guys do. It's more for the funny stuff, as we say it, what's good.
So you let the 8-Ball answer.
Will there be a
Breath of the 2 Wild sequel? And Breath of the Wild 2 sequel. Okay.
We didn't ask that question because we assumed that there would not be. Not this early.
But Fran, though.
Surprise!
Fran comes
out the dark heat, part dude. Right now. Oh, it was like almost spot on.
Master Franus. Yeah.
My biggest surprise of missing games, though, was I couldn't believe Nintendo didn't say a word about Bayonetta 3. I was that was a bummer.
I think it's because of Astral Chain. I think because it's coming so soon, they want to like push the Platinum stuff to be a little bit more away from each other. But it's been so long since we've heard about Bayonetta 3.
Yeah. Similar theory, because where the heck, what is Retro Studios doing other than working on Metroid Prime now?
They just put up that new thing today.
The job post.
Yeah.
But I got a theory that the Star Fox Grand Prix thing is probably actually done. And they're holding it for the same types of reasons. Like, we're going to push out and pace out later because we need to fill gaps.
We'll see, man. It is definitely possible. Retro, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see anything from them.
For the vast, five, six years.
I think at this point, I think it's a safer bet to say that they were working on something and got canned.
Possible.
Yeah, I think Metroid's the next thing we see from them, unfortunately. Because I thought we would have seen it.
What do you mean, unfortunately?
The next, I would rather see something soon.
Oh, yeah.
Metroid Prime 4 is not for a millennia.
Exactly. You know what
I mean? The millennium.
The millennium, dude. Get hyped. Let's get into it. Speaking of E3, thanks, Andy. That's all I needed you for.
Bye, Andy. Good job. What
thanks,
shirt
Andy.
Is that?
High quality jersey.
It's a good looking shirt.
It's perfectly dark.
Should I play that game? Yeah. All right.
God. E3, friend, let's start with you. What was your game of the show, E3 2019?
I've been struggling with this one a little bit, but...
Before you say it, because what we did the Kind of Funny Approved, where we gave four different games are Kind of Funny Approved faces, and then we had the overall Kind of Funny Game of the Show award. So I want to know, what are your... Let's go three Fran approved, and then your... Fran game of the show.
Fran Poo's just like, I liked it. I like what I've seen.
Your top things. Doesn't need to be ranks, just top things.
Yeah, I don't, even the word top, I'm going to use loose because I actually didn't see a ton hands-on, and I saw all the press conferences. So I don't know if you were judging stuff for the press conferences too.
There's
a lot out there.
Our qualifications are, can we give our face award to someone physically?
Okay, yeah. So behind closed door demo or played it. So based on that, Frank, it's just top of my head stuff that stuck out. Ooh, yeah, I really liked Watch Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Cyberpunk. And, well, Final Fantasy VII Remake, obviously. But it was hard because, like, I also checked out Borderlands and...
was it a new demo?
I really liked Luigi.
Borderlands?
Yeah, they added a new Vault Hunter.
Moe's.
I thought so. When we were doing Easy Allies, I think they saw it at Xbox, their stage, where it was the demo we played at the event. And then I was wondering if on the floor there behind closed doors.
Yeah, they had a new gameplay build.
Yeah, so I know I cheated that a bit, but I just put in the honorable mention of Luigi was a really good showing.
Mario.
And I played Zelda, Pokemon, and that.
We'll get out to all the Nintendo stuff later. I'm not asking you everything you played, Fran.
I know.
I'm asking you for your top three.
Tough for me to
Fran approved.
I think I got it, right?
And what's your number one then? What's your game of the show?
Game of the show for Fran.
Probably Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. It's
right answer, baby. Right answer.
And he lost. Snow Like Mike made the right call.
Yeah. We needed a tiebreaker for our game of the show because I chose Final Fantasy. He chose Cyberpunk.
Oh, nice.
And then we had a debate on the show. Yeah. Snow Like Mike ended up going Cyberpunk.
Are we going to talk about this on the show?
What's up?
I was just wondering if we're talking about those games on the show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We're talking about all of them, baby.
Whatever Andrea. You want for him.
What are the Andrea approved? Three games, and then what is the Andrea game of the show?
So this is, I've been making this list because obviously we're both part of GCAs. So it's kind of finding what's good. Are you guys, does it count? Is it all games we saw, or does it have to have been playable?
We just do all games you saw. We don't do the playable stuff like the Keelys do.
Okay. For top three, three games I liked, and then I'll leave my game of the show. Okay. I have to say... Cyberpunk 2077 for sure. I was glad I got to see it this year. The demo looks awesome. I am excited to play, and I really liked what they showed us in the behind closed doors demo and how, you know, kind of like really the layers of world building that they're doing in that game are really impressive, especially since it's all original stuff. They're not working off of like a existing intellectual property, a book series. I think maybe no.
No,
brand new. I don't think so. I think it's all like CDPR original stuff, right? If I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really impressive. And so the tech that they showed looks really cool. I was a little disappointed. It's a second year and we didn't get even like a small build to try out and see what the gameplay feels like. So I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah.
But knowing their history and everything they did with The Witcher, I think they've set themselves up for some success, hopefully. So that's one for sure. I also was really impressed with Watch Dogs Legion and everything they showed. I was incredibly skeptical before they showed gameplay and before they gave hands-on. And then afterwards, I was like, okay, I'm going down this path. I love the idea of like there's these three archetype classes and that there's all these different NPCs that fit into them. And then you're kind of like building a squad that has like a mix and match of all these different kind of RPG mechanics.
They've all got perks.
Yeah.
Well, they only have three perks, but there's a million other perks.
Exactly. So. You can kind of tailor it to your personal play style. Like, do you want to go all drone commanders or do you want to do people who all have stealth?
And or...
Like,
old ladies. Just old ladies. Yeah.
I like
the
that
slowest
one.
Squad in Watch Dogs Legion.
Hell yeah.
So I thought that was a really impressive showing for sure. And then also Final Fantasy VII Remake. I had no interest in this game before seeing the combat demo. And this is me as somebody who's never been a Final Fantasy player. I was forced into playing Final Fantasy IX on PS4 because Alexa Ray was like, you said you would do it. I was like, I did say I would do it. So I did it with her. And then I quit after like 15 hours.
Did you play Final Fantasy VII or just watch the
demo?
I've
never played. No,
this new one.
No, Britt got hands on though, and I watched a bunch of people play it.
Cool.
But I did not get on the sticks and play.
So I love this right now where we're at, because you named Cyberpunk and Final Fantasy in your
approved.
Andrea approved.
Too, right? Yes.
So what does that make your game of the show?
The Outer Worlds is my game of the show.
Nice. I can't wait.
Tell me more.
So I was incredibly impressed by everything I saw. So I've seen this game a couple of times now. Greg and I had the opportunity to see it at Judges Week, which was a different demo than the one that I saw at E3, which I liked. They got to see a little bit different side. We got to see more of the narrative consequences and choices that are going to be offered, whereas the demo we saw previously was a little bit more combat focused and skill tree focused. What I really love about this is that they're taking everything that Obsidian knows about making RPGs, the basis for why people loved what they did with Fallout New Vegas, and then just like polishing the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're not necessarily reinventing the wheel. Like, you're seeing what, you know, CDPR is doing with Cyberpunk, and they're really kind of pushing the envelope for things that they've done in their gameplay techniques before. What I love about what Obsidian is doing with The Outer Worlds is they're like, we are going to give you gameplay that we know you want and that you love, and we're going to give it to you like super polished in a reasonable amount of time to play an open world sci-fi RPG.
Yeah, that's what they talk about this one, right? It's like 20, 30 hours.
No, they said it was more like 50, 60 hours. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Golden Path or whatever like 20, 30 hours, but like with, if you do side content. I mean, if you're in an open world RPG, who's doing Golden Path anyway, really? But what I like about it is that it's not something that I have to go in planning to spend 100, 200, 300 plus
you're
hours
never going to see
doing.
The end of, yeah.
Right. I like that they made it more of a bespoke experience versus this procedurally generated never-ending thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, that's cool if that's what you're looking for, but that's not necessarily what I'm looking for as a gamer. So I was really impressed by it. I thought the gameplay looked great. I love that, you know, it's that feeling that you get from any game that brings in narrative consequences with your choices about really having to make that morally gray decision about like, oh gosh, is this the decision I want to make? And knowing that you're going to be missing out on something if you make one decision or another. But another game, can we make it five instead of four?
Go for it.
I think I did.
Well, the one that kind of rounds up my top five of E3 is Dying Light 2, which was a big surprise for me because I was not expecting to be impressed by what I saw there. Not because Techland doesn't know how to make games, because clearly they do, but because the idea of a zombie game just doesn't really blow my skirt up. I'm like, I'm okay. And like, quite frankly, the day-night cycle stuff that they did in the original Dying Light was cool, but it was too intense for me as a player playing at night with all of these really crazy monsters just chasing you all the time. And so I haven't seen the night cycle stuff in Dying Light 2 yet because they haven't showed it yet. But the BCD demo that we got at E3 was really impressive from a open world traversal perspective. What they did to upgrade the parkour in this game was really impressive from the demo that they showed. And they also are bringing in these kind of big narrative choices that will affect your gameplay. I think he said something like there are like 40 plus different endings that you can get or something.
I can look at my notes.
Or maybe that's a different game.
I thought it was maybe teens for this one.
But essentially, like, the idea that if you make one decision, it could open up this whole new section of the map and bring in these new infected that you have to fight. But if you make the other decision, maybe you never see that part of the map ever in your playthrough. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of stuff, I think, is really interesting from a narrative perspective. So,
awesome.
Wow. Yeah. Dylan. I just have 15 years later is the only number I have here. I don't have anything about the ending.
I think I asked the co-creative director when I was talking to him on the Facebook stage about it. And I think with that game, they said that there's no way to really compute a number because of the sheer amount of choices that they have within the narrative of the game.
Well, I mean, that was the thing with that behind closed doors demo, right? Where when, you know, they made the choice to turn on the water pumps, right? That then gave you a giant new open world area to play in. Mm-hmm. And they're like, any questions? Like, yeah. So like, you're talking about choices. Like if I did the choice where I don't turn on the water pumps, does that part of the world in all those quests stay submerged? He's like, yes. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, you expect it to be some story decision that you make, but if you don't make it, well, then somebody else does something else that does it anyway. That, because obviously they spent a lot of time and money to make
like
all that.
Building that part of the world.
And they're like, no, just not there in this playthrough. I'm like, all right, cool.
That's crazy. Last Gamescast, when we did it with Easy Allies, we were talking a little bit about my impressions of Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Yeah.
Friend, you got to play it.
I did.
What are your thoughts as a guy that I feel like the game's a bit more up your alley?
Yeah, yeah. It absolutely stood out. Like, it was one on my mind to throw in that list. But I really like squad-based co-op combat, obviously, Division 2.
That's right.
Right? Let's go. New classification. What is it called? The new...
Specialization
is out there, FYI, man.
Fake fan, you know what I mean?
The gunner's out. Anyway.
Tell me about the Destiny Power Lord thing, you know what I mean?
So I really like Breakpoint because it is, unlike Division 2, it is so up close and brutal. It is very realistic, for lack of a better way to put it. So people probably already know a lot of that about it, but if you get a wound, you might get in a certain place, you got to bandage up, you have to take your time. You really can't get shot down without
Sirens
coordinating
on
with
our
people.
End.
So I love playing with other people. It remains to be seen as a single-player experience, and you can play it as a single-player experience. Yeah, sirens on our end, right? But I really like it. I like that it just felt so up close and brutal. I thought the demo was okay, though. It was just hard. It's hard to get into a demo like that when I only had an hour. And even then, you spent the first 15 minutes like them. Here's this button, and here's where your loadouts are. Yeah. And then,
how did you get through your inventory, Fran?
Yeah, right, exactly. Here's your inventory.
I mean, I was kind of talking about this a bit. Like, first off, not my type of game, typically. Yeah. Also, I thought that was one of the worst demos I've ever been a part of. And I think a lot of that just had to do with who I was playing with and how it was all presented and how late in the show it was. But it wasn't a great showing of the game.
Do one of the producers, whatever, walk or
walk you through kind of just like so rapidly. Here, it was like, oh, cool, we're doing this. Now we're going to do this. Now it's like, okay, whoa.
Well, it's probably because you're talking about the showcase, like Ubisoft's press conference?
After it,
no, I'm talking about like the hands-on.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Playing
gotcha.
It at the booth.
So, oh, you played it at the booth.
At the Ubisoft booth.
So I played it. Yeah. They had a, after the conference, you know, you go to one of their event hubs.
Got it.
We went and played it. I wonder if it was the same. How long did you get to play?
About almost an hour, maybe 45 minutes.
So it's probably very similar. Someone was on comms with you and walking you through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had the same experience. And that's what I would, that's my caveat, is I was like, well, I didn't really have a chance to experience exactly how I would have because someone's like pushing us and I had to play with these other people. And like, yeah, I would have rather directed and even if I didn't know what I was doing because like that's the experience is making that choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the intensity of it and I just leave it at that. I like some of the skills. You know, you can watch the trailer announcement for all the stuff that's in there. But basically we ended up a little late into it where you had to throw EMP tanks at this giant tank. You had to switch your loadout. Get a bazooka or missile launcher or whatever. You had to make sure to get ammo for it, and you had to coordinate as a team to do all this. And it was definitely that was the most challenging thing they said that was on our map.
Yeah, we did the same thing as well. The rocket launchers towards the tanks.
And it's funny because the dude helped so much that I actually didn't think it was that difficult, but I could see it being difficult.
Yeah, because the idea was it's like you had your four people. You needed to each bring out your rocket launcher and shoot it, but you can't all do it from the same vantage point. Like you all need to kind of like
he's chasing
surround
tank
this tank and take
you.
It down. Did you find the controls cumbersome?
Oh yeah. I mean with that type of game though, that's gonna happen.
Yeah. I thought the weapon wheel or not even weapon wheel, inventory
the everything
wheel.
Because
it's like
right?
yeah, it's like it's your band-aids, it's your health spray, it's all your weapons is on the same wheel.
Yeah.
Weird.
Let me say this much though. I got an hour into it. I felt like it finally sunk in. That's the only thing I would just add is this is totally the type of game, like, I mean, Division's that way. Like, until you play for a good, honestly, hour or more, it's so hard for, you don't feel comfortable.
Wrap your head around all that stuff.
And you got somebody wheeling you around, go here. It's really hard to process the game. I think that's why they did have some two-hour demos going. I would have liked to spend some time with that. But what I was going to add is at the very end, I finally was like, okay, now I know where everything's at. Now, I just got this shotgun. I'm like, let's go.
Shotty Bugatti.
And they're like, that's the end of the demo. And you had to like peel me off of it at the end.
That's good.
So that was a good sign for
me. Did you play Wildlands? Did that click for you?
Oh, I didn't get to play it.
Gotcha.
Wait. No. Sorry.
Ghost Recon Wildlands. Yeah.
I don't know why I was thinking about Outer Wilds. I played Wildlands. And I did like it. Yeah. It had all the right ideas. And I think that's what this sort of helps bring together as well. Like it goes deeper, a little more serious. I thought the quest and storyline that you followed in Wildlands was not great. It was sort of tedious. You had to unlock all these different parts of the map. And I don't know if this is going to do anything like that. But again, what I liked is I use the word intensity and close up. That's what this feels like to me. It gets really close over your shoulder. It's very much about you and you can get hurt very easily. So I think it's got a lot of potential, actually, as a squad-based, you know, co-op game. I don't know about single player yet. That's really hard to say. So wait, so you didn't? It's not your type of game anyway.
Not my type of game, but even then, I didn't like it. I thought that it didn't demo well, and I think that a lot of the controls, even if you get used to them later, it doesn't make them good. Like, I didn't like how you had to equip the rocket launcher and then hold the button to bring the animation up. And just like, if you let go, it went away instantly. And I'm like, that doesn't add up. It's like, I feel like it's at odds with itself.
I had trouble with the rocket launcher too. It's like, it's just like so early for me to say yay or nay and condemn that because I'm used to, again,
doesn't this come out this fall?
Yeah, it comes out in September, I think. There's a beta in September. And then the actual official release date is September, October. I forget. I feel like it's
Andrew's on the case. Don't worry.
We'll pull it up right
now. John Bernthal and Bam Bam will tell you about it.
I'm glad I'm here, though, Tim, because you'd be like, yeah, it was cumbersome, didn't do it for me. Totally
valid
points. October 4th.
I mean, that's not a lot of time to take into feedback if they are running into other people. I haven't seen other hands-on impressions.
I will say that everyone that was in the room with me doing the demo, not just my squad, but like everyone kind of seemed like, oh, all right. Cool. Like, they just kept up. I'm like, yeah, okay, now equip this. Now go to that loadout. Cool, go. And everyone's like, I don't know about this.
It's complicated. I mean, again, you can't just hop in and expect to know all this stuff. And so again, I'm not defending it yet. It's early, but I would say you should have expected that going in. It is just that type of game that there's a lot going on. Like, I definitely felt intimidated at first. I was like, where is all this stuff? And yet, you know, your loadouts change in the menu. Yeah, which I definitely thought was, I was like, what?
But I will say the Wildlands demo was one of my favorite E3 demos we've ever done. When it was me and Greg, and like when the first time we played, and they brought us in, and it was kind of like raiding the area, and like that stuff was awesome. And it's like it's very similar. So
I felt but it was less complex, as I recall, from a what you could do. Yeah, mm-hmm. You didn't have to bandage up first and then heal yourself, and the way you go stealth, like all those things were. That's fine, by the way. I liked Wildlands, but it was very. I don't want to say surface level because it was deeper than that, but this goes really deep from what I could tell with my hands on. So there's just like a lot to learn. And frankly, like I feel like if you hop into we'll talk about FF7 remake later, but right? There's a process where you're like, wait, what am I doing? Once it sinks in, you're good. Mm-hmm. But beforehand, you're like, does this even make sense? You know, I mean, so I feel like it's one of those games. Got to have time with it.
Sure, that's most games.
Let's jump right into it then.
Play it?
No.
Okay. Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah. Frank, I've already been talking it. I didn't want to take it over. Like, should
I mean, people kind of funny. Gamescast listeners have heard me talk about E3. It's your guys' show. This part
you had to watch.
No, so I didn't personally hold the controller, but I, you know, watched the presentation at the Square Enix press conference and got to see some people playing it on the show floor. I think that what they're doing with the updated combat is really cool. I think it appeals to people like me who were never interested in a Final Fantasy game that was, you know, old turn-based method, right? But I'm really more interested in the Final Fantasy 15 style of, you know, third-person combat. That to me is more exciting, but I like how they've kept that kind of classic tactical mode in to kind of make it, give it like a nod to the turn-based ways of yore, or however you want to refer to it. And the animation looks great. Obviously, like, there was still more to be seen about what is this extra stuff that they're adding in to fill out so many additional hours of gameplay. Like, how much extra narrative does that, what does that look like? What does that mean? How does it change the original storytelling of the game? I think that there's still a lot of unknowns, but it seems like people are pretty hyped for it.
Yeah,
I would say that with everything they showed here, I feel like it's all hints of going in a good direction. Mm-hmm. Like how they're going to fill it out, all the new stuff we saw, dialogue wise, character wise, and even plot wise of like what was going on with Sephiroth and stuff. I think that it's very much in good hands, and I have full faith that they're going to kind of succeed with this vision of what they're trying to do of remaking this game, not just for the people that love the original, but for new people, but also just making this just a good game without having to stand on what came before. I think that I was saying this in the last episode, but the similarities to 15, I think, are just visually, just looking at it, it plays totally different than 15. It is way more action-based until you get to the turn-based. It's not so much like a either or. It's like you need the action parts to kind of build up your, so you like slash a bunch to build up your gauge to then be able to use the more, it's not turn-based, but things slow down, more menu-based kind of tactical decision, and a lot of strategy comes into play of using your different spells and when to switch between the characters and stuff. And I've never played a game like that, that seamlessly combines the fast-paced action with the more methodical RPG elements that in a way that worked. Final Fantasy 13 tried to introduce that, but anytime it slowed down, it felt like it was a different game. This doesn't feel like a different game.
Yeah, the only game that kind of makes me think of a semi-similar situation was what they were doing in Dragon Age Inquisition, where you have your party members and they each have individual skills, and then you could go into that like top-down tactical mode. Do you guys remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously different, but semi-similar. It's what I always really wanted out of Mass Effect's combat with your squad mates, with their individual powers that you've leveled up, to be able to like hot swap between those characters was like the dream, and that just never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
hit me, Fran.
So yeah, that's good. Good point of context.
Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy. Ooh, I like this. You're welcome. I like where this is going. So yes, I was a huge Final Fantasy VII fan. So formative in my growing up. I actually only had an N64, and my friend had a PlayStation, and we had to trade. He wanted to play GoldenEye, and we'd play at my house anyway, but he wanted to have that and other stuff, and I wanted to play PlayStation, so I borrowed his PlayStation, which later led to a corrupted save file.
Oh.
That almost, he's my best friend probably in all of life. So we blasted through it. And
that was it was a tough time, hard to explain.
I was like, I don't know what happened. It just, the save corrupted. Anyway.
Fran, it's years later. You can admit you pull it out and then save.
They warn you, Fran.
So I was a huge fan of FF7. I've been waiting for this forever, like everybody else. I have actually been, not intentionally media blackout, but maybe unknowingly I have been. So I actually didn't see the Square conference. I didn't have time before I had a chance to play it. So I kind of went in pretty fresh, not knowing more than what I've seen in the trailers. Okay, so just to set things up, again, as a reminder, yes, it's a remake of Final Fantasy VII. We know it's chapterized or some. Well, we don't know for sure.
There's going to be more than one game. That's all we know.
It's going to split it up.
They're not using the word episodic. They're staying away from that, and they're not saying how many games are going to come. Yeah. But they're saying it'll be like
Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1, right?
Yes. You're reliving.
They're saying that it's the up till the end of Midgar.
Yeah. That's right. This is Midgard. You're reliving the characters and the story, and you know they're doing other stuff in there. But anyway, so I went in pretty fresh. And number one, what stood out to me a ton was actually, yes, the production value. It shouldn't surprise me with Square, but that maybe above all is what stood out. I was like, wow, like how close up it is in the characters, the detail of all the worlds. And actually, when you get into the boss scene, I was really impressed with just the amount of like custom, like close-up cutscenes and things happening to keep you engaged during battle.
That weren't quick time events.
No. It's in the middle of like damaging the boss. Yeah, it'll just be like, it like pulls back. Yeah, it's not a quick time event. It's you did some damage, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like this scene, but it's custom. And there's like close-ups and mid-range shots. And I thought that was really impressive. I just was thinking about other games I play, and I was like, not a lot of games go to this amount of detail. Granted, this was just one boss and this one level, and how much of this is going to happen, but I was like really impressed with how cinematic that boss fight felt for what it was. I don't know. How did you feel about what
I totally agree. And I mean, I feel like Square, you know, for all the shit that they get and in a lot of cases deserve, the production value is always the one thing that they knock out of the park. Like with Final Fantasy 15, the boss fights were that way, where it's like every single one was equally momentous. It's like epic. Fighting the
That's
Titan.
What Final
it's like,
known
whoa,
for.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like 15 finally hit that point, I think, where I remember growing up watching Advent Children, the Final Fantasy VII movie, and just being like, oh my God, can you imagine being able to play this? Like, that's insane. And now it's like, no, that's the case. Like, that's what this is now. And I love the cinematic camera of the gameplay that backs everything up of switching between characters. Did you do that at all?
Oh, yeah.
When you switch between Cloud and Barrett. Like, just the way it's seamless. Like, you hit up and down on the D-pad, and it'll just, like, the camera goes out a little bit, goes over quickly, and then, like, goes back in. And it's just, like, it feels so good.
It's pretty good, yeah. So you real-time switch between characters where Cloud and Barrett, one, obviously, with, like, a big, giant minigun, and Cloud with his sword. Yeah, you just press the D-pad, and it fast swaps wherever. Overall, I felt it was good. Definitely, like, any game like this, the camera's not always quite where you want it to be. But you have full control. Yeah, I definitely...
Oh, I thought it was great.
It definitely got in... Like, there'd be times where the boss was, like, in between, you just spin it around. Like, you fix it. But I definitely didn't feel like it was some perfect system, like, you know. Not that it was bad, by the way.
I was very impressed with the camera
work specifically. You didn't feel you needed to adjust it.
Okay. No.
I did.
I felt more... Because, like, the thing is, you're kind of auto-targeting on these, right? So I feel like it looks more similar to like a third person action game, and it's not that. So it's like the moment you just kind of lock on, then all you need to really worry about is like your menus of what spells you're casting.
And, you know, part of it maybe is just my playstyle. I like a certain frame on the boss and seeing myself and also my other character, but whatever. So jumping to the next point, the new combat system. Yeah, I would say that absolutely surprised me that it pulled it off in a way that does feel modern, but still respectful to call it the ways of yore. Like you said, it is turn-based in a moment, but you're right. It's a progressive new combat system. So you basically, you have real time, right? I'm Cloud. I got a giant sword. I can just like block bullets and stuff and get up close and start slashing at someone. So that now builds my next level, right? So I'm building this meter to unlock the real or the turn-based style combat, right? Yeah. That's how it works. You have like, what I saw there was two meters that you fill up. So each one
you get two slots to fill up. Yeah. Right. And so, it's not turn-based. Like we keep saying turn-based. Well, it's absolutely not.
It's not, but it is the same thing. So here's why it is turn-based for a moment.
It's menu-based.
Okay. Semantical mark. You should work for the marketing department. I follow you. But like you literally press a button and you build a meter. No. It's true.
Don't tell Fran he's wrong. He doesn't take it well.
You're not taking turns.
No. Because you're right that it's not, but it's also semantical because I'm going to argue it is because as soon as you finally build a meter and you press the button, it does stop. Action stops. It's your turn to make a decision. You have a moment to, I mean, well, is it slow motion-ish?
It's slow-mo, yeah. It doesn't stop.
There's a lot of time. If there's not a moment where you can't act because the boss is taking his turn, then it's not turn-based.
Yeah,
was there that moment where you couldn't move or do anything because the boss was setting up a spell or an attack against you?
You're right, actually. You were right. The boss doesn't take its turn.
Right. So then it's not turn-based.
It's half turn-based then. You take your turn and the boss doesn't get to. You don't get to. Here, I'm going to argue. You don't get to see the boss. He's doing it. You don't get to see it.
Okay.
That's like another level of role play out there.
Fran, you're coming to Jesus on this and I like it. And it's also time to probably admit Double Dash, not a 7-9. Higher than that, right? Let's just get him out.
So
get that weight off your shoulder, you know?
Another day, another time. So anyway, I really like it though. So you build a meter and you get into this next level of combat. So both characters are building it. You can switch between and use these really cool moves. You can also heal and take the moments to do stuff like that. So I really like that you go slow-mo, use these really cool moves that have cool animations and all that. And then, of course, you have the top level, which is your
limit break,
which is your super. So you're building all this stuff, and it feels great. Yeah, like you said, I loved all of the feel of everything. So I'm pretty hyped about it now that I'm seeing it because the production value, it was fun to play. It didn't feel broken or awkward or boring. You know, it was fun to take that boss down. Boss had different parts that you were focused on. You could play your way. I actually realized too late I was focusing on just the main centerpiece for the whole time, so I didn't break the legs. Does something happen to you know if you break the legs?
If you break the legs down, then it's immobile and it doesn't shoot as many of the rockets.
But
and stuff.
I ended up not doing that because I was just like going hype and I was excited to play it. So really happy with that. And the last note I would make is the visuals though, I'm still getting used to. It's this really weird, like highly dithered look. There's this noisiness, not quite a film grain. I don't know if it's because of the hair and some of the stuff they're doing. Some of it's good because it's not clean, but it's got this dithered, noisy look, like almost the screen door effect is on a lot. Did you notice that?
I see what you're talking about, but I feel like that's always been the case with Final Fantasy VII's art style. Like it always has the kind of like dirty air look.
Yeah, part of it is that it's also just the engine and the way that it's dithering between stuff. Anyway, not a problem, but it took some getting used to. I'm curious if it was the TV, if it was 4K, like who knows?
Yeah.
And it's not final.
Did you see the behind closed doors like demonstration before you got to play?
Yeah, they did like the tutorial thing first, right? So I saw that, the explanation. That was pretty cool. But I didn't show, it didn't show us anything really different than the demo, did it?
So did you just do the thing where like they play the demo on the TV and then you get to go in, or do you do the thing that was like an hour long thing before you got
to play?
Oh no, I
didn't see the hour
long. Okay, cool. That was like the producer playing through, showing a lot more of just like what the overworld stuff looks like. Or not overworld, but like playing through the mission, not just the like, let's get to the boss part.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's like above all, this is not turn-based.
First thing,
very specifically,
is not turn-based.
Andrea.
Yes.
What game do you want to talk about here? You want to talk about Watch Dogs Legion a little bit?
Maybe not Watch Dogs, because I didn't get as much time with that as my coworkers did.
It's awesome. But get excited. Get hype.
Yeah. Let me look through my notes really quick about the games that I got to play that we didn't really get to talk about yet. Well, we didn't talk about Journey to the Savage Planet or Control.
Control.
From 505.
Yeah, I wanted to try that. I didn't get a chance.
We didn't get to talk about Oh, I could talk about Darksiders Genesis.
Hell yes. Oh. A game I haven't talked on the other shows about that I'm super stoked for.
Yeah, so this was one of those games that was embargoed until the Tuesday of E3 when they opened the show floor and then they had kiosks for people, everybody at E3 to go and try out Darksiders Genesis. So this is being published by THQ Nordic, being developed by Airship Syndicate. We got a chance to get a deep dive with it during Judges Week, which was great because we got like 45 to 60 minutes to really play through the whole demo. I don't know how long the demo was that they had on the show floor. And what's up over there, Kevin?
Too much pizza for Kevin.
Exactly.
He's got the cheese crazies.
So they have this new horseman, Strife, that they've introduced, who we got to play as. But then they also have War coming back as a playable character. And so it's a co-op game between Strife and War. I actually really preferred Strife's gameplay style because he's a little bit more nimble, more like he can tumble a little bit faster, and then he's got these dual blades, which are really cool.
Now, hard pause. Question. Do you know anything about Darksiders Genesis?
That's what I was going to say. If you could say, I think I do, and I'm like, is this like a Diablo? Like, I'm
walking
not sure.
Walking into it, that was my thing, where they're like, oh, Diablo Genesis, or Darksiders Genesis, like, oof, I'm not a Darksiders guy. And it was, no, this is a new take on Darksiders. This is not the Darksiders you know. Yes, it is like a Diablo. It is an action RPG, you know.
Isometric,
exactly. Go in there, fight the things, get the loot, go through, and you know, get better or whatever. Yeah, and so, I was like,
roguelike? Yeah. So just to set it up, since you guys are bringing up a good point that a lot of people don't know about Darksiders. So originally a hack and slash action adventure video game. We've got three of them. The series is set in post apocalyptic Earth where mankind has become extinct and angels and demons battle for the world's control. Among them are the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. This is just literally straight from Wikipedia, by the way. The last of the Nephilim, who are tasked to bring balance and order. So essentially, you've got these four horsemen, and they're the stars of the game. Mm-hmm. And so in this one, it's Strife and War. Those are the only two playable. And I asked them if, you know, I kind of was like, why? You've got all these great horsemen. Why not make them all playable? And they're kind of like left it unanswered.
So did they say the other ones won't be in the game exclusively?
That was my understanding from the questions that I asked them, that it was just going to be Strife and War. But
I imagine you'll see them pop up in terms of a cutscene. They're doing their thing. They're on their own action.
Yeah, they appear in the game, but I don't believe they're going to be playable. Yeah, 100%, right. Yeah. So it's co-op, online multiplayer, or local split screens, you can choose. And then if you're playing solo, you can swap between the characters. Oh. And so it is very much that Diablo top-down isometric look.
You have an AI partner if you're running solo. Which is what we did. We
really
were all playing solo.
For co-op then. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is cool.
So I asked them about damage scaling in co-op, and they said there is none, but that maybe that they would add a limiter in the future. There's a variety of vendors that you can find that you can buy upgrades for, because there is, you know, like a skill tree for the horseman that you're playing as. And what I really liked about the gameplay is that it really kind of did this nice combination of some traversal puzzles with really great, you know, top-down hack and slash combat, which... It was just really fun to play. Now, the build that we played had a few issues, but it was pre-alpha, so kind of, you know, we forgive builds for being a little buggy when they're in that state. Mm-hmm. And for people who are concerned or curious, I should say, about the narrative, it is a standalone story that takes place before Darksiders 1. So if you're like really into the Darksiders franchise, it's after the war in Eden and after the Nephilim have been destroyed and they've just become the horsemen. So they're
the genesis of the horsemen.
Correct. There Darksiders you go. Genesis.
Look at that. Nailed
the
it.
Name.
Yeah, for me, you know, again, not having any background with it, I was surprised. For me, with THQ Nordic, this is the one I walked out the most impressed with. And the one that I walked, it was for that day, I think, the game where I was like, this is the one I want the most, because I want this on my Switch right now. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to play this on the plane, on the bus, or whatever. It was just, the gameplay was so good. It felt good to hack and slash. It felt good to roll around as the different characters, right? Strife, more fast than War, like, right? There's actually a different thing. So when we were approaching bosses or baddies, it was like, well, what is the approach I want? And I could switch off between it. I thought it was colorful. I thought the world looked good. Again, like you said, very early. There was the one, I think I mentioned this at the time when we were embargoed, that I had one of the weirdest things happen to me in a demo. This is the game where I got to a point and I got stuck and I popped off my ear and it, Joe Mads, and I was like, Joe, what am I not doing? He came over and was like, oh yeah, like it's your, it seemed like there was like signposting issues, right? He's like, you don't have to worry about that. You're trying to get into a secret area, but it looks like it's a main area. There's a ladder over there that's like hidden. I was like, oh, it was just like not lit up the right way. It's like, great. And then as I went to put it back on, everyone else started hitting the exact same thing.
It was like literally the nightmare
for a developer, because right. He literally was like, oh man, I told them we should have done something different here and I'll put this in the demo. And it's everyone, of course, is we all get it. Like, oh my God, it's an unfinished game. Don't worry about it, blah, blah, blah. And it didn't take away from it. It's still the game that I was like, this, like, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. This is the game I'd want with me.
Right. Hmm.
But you did hit a confusing point, and hopefully they iron stuff like
I think
that out.
Yeah, and I mean, they knew ahead of time. It was just, I mean, getting their demo ready. That's what they ran with.
Yeah, we see that stuff all the time.
Yeah. But like you said, the traversal stuff was great. The combat was great. I thought the characters felt different enough. What do you got for me?
What is the combat? I mean, is it like very super powered? Is it a lot of different buttons? Is it simple?
No, it's mostly like a two button system. So I mean, you have a light attack, a heavy attack, a dodge or evade, and then you have like a powered up attack that you kind of, you know, build up over, it refreshes over time, and then it's like a super. So when I was playing as Strife, you would like hit like the double shoulder buttons or whatever, and then he would go into this giant flaming monster looking thing with this giant axe that you could use to do like really big damage against bosses. But what was interesting is that they put us into this dungeon run mode where we got to fight one of like the big bosses, because the boss we fought in that main demo was just like a mini boss, which was still a pretty tough boss. But in the dungeon run mode where we got to fight like this giant boss, that whole boss fight, if you beat it, and I didn't spend the amount of time because we had X amount of games we had to play, would be like a 45 minute boss fight. So almost kind of raid like, but not, because it's just co-op. It's not like a big group activity.
Totally dug it. Really excited for it. It for me, it's striking the same notes that I liked of why I was excited about Marvel Ultimate Alliance. However, I feel like this is the better game of those two. Yeah, because to your point of like when we were playing Ultimate Alliance, like I feel like this game has a more, I know what this is. There's only two characters, obviously, so they feel different. They feel more unique, which is what we were talking about playing Ultimate Alliance 3, where it was like, I'm Cap, but you're Wolverine. It doesn't feel like there's that much of a difference. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Kind of speaking about that, I want to talk about Nintendo, friend. But before we do that, let me tell you that this episode is brought to you by some beautiful sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out, it's hard, especially if your FICO score isn't great. Thankfully, there's now Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. This really could have helped my boy that shall remain nameless back in the college days when he, not naming him, Kevin, not going to name him. But there was a lot of issues going on, and this definitely could have helped him kind of get things going, because Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. And the best part is, once a loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next day. That's the next day, man. That's like, you can't get much sooner than that. You can free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart's ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/kindoffunny to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit score. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny. upstart.com/kindoffunny. And also, shout out to Zebit. No one likes zero of anything, like when you break your phone and lose contact with the outside world. That means zero calls, zero texts, zero social media. Honestly, life without a phone means pretty much no life at all. Having zero of anything is hardly a good thing unless we're talking about Zebit. That's Zebit. They'll change your whole perspective on zero forever. Zero sign-up fees, zero interest financing. This all sounds like fantastic zeros to me. It's a better credit option. Zebit provides a better credit option for those who need it. They allow you to buy what you need and pay over time, interest-free. There's zero cost to join with Zebit. There's no cost, no membership fees, and no late fees. Zero impact on your credit score. So many zeros, so little time. Huge marketplace. Zebit has everyday items at everyday prices. They have more than 50,000 products in their marketplace with brand names like Xbox, Sony, Apple, powerful GoPro and Fitbit, from electronics to barbecues, furniture, and more. Zebit has everything you need for when you need it. Sign up for Zebit today at zebit.com/kinda and get $2,500 credit to the shop the Zebit marketplace at zero interest and zero cost to join. That's zebit.com/kinda for $2,500 of interest-free credit. zebit.com/kinda. Nintendo, baby.
Yeah.
E3 booth. What'd you get to play?
Just the big three that I considered anyway, which was Pokemon, Zelda, and Luigi.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to play any Nintendo games?
I missed the Nintendo booth appointment with the girls because I was hosting on the Facebook stage. So did not get to see the booth.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance is one of the big three. All right.
You just trash talked it next to Genesis.
No, I like it a lot.
I don't know. I think I've heard enough.
I'm so fast.
Talk to me about Pokemon. I did not play Pokemon. I watched people do the demo, but I was kind of like, I get it. I know what this is. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. Here's the deal.
Okay, he was falling asleep there, everybody.
It doesn't have enough engrams for him.
No. So, well, yes, that's true. Destiny joke, everybody. Get with it. Okay, number one, it's not that I'm against Pokemon. I liked Pokemon Go and recently Pokemon...
Let's Go.
Let's Go. But I never really got into the Game Boy stuff, just for time's sake.
You get a lot of Pokemon
Sleep. I know that I would have enjoyed it. Oh, Pokemon Sleep, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny now that I just was jokingly sleeping. But anyway, long story short, I just don't think the demo is any good.
It's so hard to demo a Pokemon game. Dude, that's why I didn't play it.
Let's describe what the demo was.
I think it is.
Why is it hard to demo a Pokemon game?
Because I think it's hard to demo any turn-based RPG.
Okay, let's go over what the demo was and why I just don't think it was a good idea. I felt like it was for like... kids, don't get me wrong. It's not like it was bad, but
I mean,
they,
it's Pokemon. Perhaps because
Pokemon like, is for children.
Did you go straight into that gym with the Switches?
Y'all need to grow up.
I didn't play it.
Okay, well, I'm pretty,
I just watched people do it.
Because sure
I know. I'm like, I don't need to get my hands on Pokemon.
So basically, all you did, you will know there were two things that you did, as I recall. So one, you get put into, pretty quickly after some dialogue, I think, into like a little gym with these great pathways, and there's like these water pipes that are pouring water down onto the path so you can't proceed. And there's red and yellow switches.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going around getting, just figuring out the switches, and in between, of course, there's some other Pokemon trainers are like, wait a second, where are you going? And then you got to fight them, and how fast you do it based on what you have, which is already your loadout. So it's clearly a little bit into the game, probably, but I just didn't enjoy, like, I've done this 1,000 billion times in video games. So doing some switches, figuring out the puzzle, and just doing some basic fights. Fights that I feel didn't really offer anything more than when I was playing
But you can get big now.
Yes.
Did you ever go big?
The Dynamax you're talking about?
So, Dynamax. I think it's right after this that you go into, yeah, the stadium. So they let you try the stadium out. And you get into a fight, yeah, a really big fight, and you use, yeah, the Dynamax, and you have this really big Pokemon. And that it was a cool fight. So
were you the Corgi?
Oh, I don't remember.
You make a big Corgi?
I don't remember.
Fran?
I honestly don't remember what Pokemon
you would remember.
I
the big
you
didn't
even give this game a chance.
I tried all the different Pokemon. Again, I'm not a Pokemon expert. I apologize, but I'm not going to be a fake fan and pretend that I know all the Pokemon's names and stuff. So anyway,
I'm just calling it the Corgi.
So here's my brief overview, which was like I was looking forward to playing an open world that had sort of a. Something to it that I could feel, and like I didn't get that demo, so that must be coming later. But they did something that was just very like it just didn't feel like
Yamper.
Oh yeah, I tried
is the Corgi Pokemon. I did.
There's a Hardin's butt.
Oh, it's got a little like fur,
a little fur butt, a little Corgi fur butt.
In any event, the stadium stuff was cool, and I like Dynamax, and I think that's the new thing. But it just was all very basic, and so it just wasn't an exciting demo. And when we get to Luigi, I think you'll hear why
Mario.
I'm just next.
Let's get right into it, dude. Funny. Luigi, baby.
Then let's jump into it. Like, so I played even Zelda, and by the way, huge Zelda fan. I played Zelda, and I just was like, okay.
Wait, Luigi. Let's talk about Zelda.
No, but
Zelda got one of my Game of the Show.
Yeah, let's
approved
let's do
things.
This. Let's lead on to save the best for last.
Oh, wow.
And here's why. I'm not saying that Zelda may not be even the best of the three at the end of the day. Like, right. Link's Awakening seems really cool. I love the style. Again, very, very basic demo. Cool style. It was just a taste of the style. Pokemon was the same thing, but from a gameplay perspective, and you know me, I'm all about the gameplay mechanics. I was just like, okay, you know, go into the, you know, the Lost Woods and go over and push this thing and get in. And actually, I like it. I know that I'm going to like it because it's Zelda, but the demo itself just wasn't that exciting. And there was nothing new to it. So Maybe just stopping on that. Did you like how the style delivered? I loved it. I really liked
the style. I think the style delivered everything I needed. I already know the gameplay's there for Link's Awakening. I thought that they did a very good job of making me want to go back now to revisit that world and see everything it has to offer. And it's been long enough since I played Link's Awakening that I don't remember every single thing to do.
Yeah, I don't think I ever played Link's Awakening, so this will be new to
really?
Me, which is good. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was just on Game Boy only.
It's great, man.
I just don't think I got through it.
Then it got re-released on Game Boy Color.
What
never
I will
forget.
Say is...
DX.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I had many missed opportunities, apparently. So really like the style. I will be knocking Switch, however, for its performance. It's a finished game, so we'll, of course, see if it improves. Just the blurriness and the frame rate occasionally
hits
you.
It's not blurriness. It's tilt shift.
It's tilt shift, sure. But I'm not saying I like the style, Tim. I'm just saying all things combined, it feels a little like it's supposed to be dreamy, but it's hitching a little bit. I almost felt like it'd be better as
I was going to say, Kevin, yeah.
If it was 60 frames a second, I think I would just be glorious.
Here we
it was not 60. And I, that
no,
is that
no
is true. It's like
it was 25 to 30.
And I feel like it is a performance issue that I agree. I hope they clear up by the time it actually releases.
Thank you.
Because it wasn't as smooth and flawless as it should feel for a game that's a remake of a Game Boy game, even if the style is beautiful. But the blur and stuff, like that's built in the
art.
No,
I love the tilt shift stuff. No, but I'm saying all things combined, my point I'm trying to make is it's supposed to retain the sort of dreamy state. I think if and when they get it locked to 30, it'll be fine because it won't pull you out of it because of what it was. It just felt a little sluggish times. But I love the style. It really is beautiful. I just love seeing something new in terms of the Zelda style. But gameplay-wise, I mean, I don't know. You didn't do that much in the demo, right, that you haven't done.
Did everything you need to do, though.
Walked in a couple houses, you know, pushed a couple rocks and went and grabbed something.
But what I was saying last time that I was really impressed by is I feel like it showed off enough different areas, whether you're in the house or in the woods or down by the beach or whatever, and seeing the creative ways Nintendo uses the art style that it has to like kind of all add up to this whole, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, and it does look good. I am excited for it. I think it's the jaded Zelda gamer coming out in me. Like, I've played so much Zelda, so I'm very looking forward to, I mean, when Breath of the Wild came out, it blew my mind, and that's why I'm excited for the sequel. It's I also like the 2D style stuff. It's just, it's easy to not be excited by them anymore because you kind of know what to expect, so we'll see if there's any surprises.
That's why I'm excited for it, because I know what to expect.
You know,
I didn't play Link's Awakening either, so I'm going in, but I just love a good Zelda, and like I'm totally down to push blocks and get my
it's
bottles
a good
out.
Zelda, and it's weird too. Like it's not
weird.
Linked to the past. It's like you're because the Game Boy had such weird limitations, I feel like it had to have a different gameplay style. You were limited by the shape of the screen, how big the screen was of what you could show. So it's like they had to get really weird with some of the things that you had to do. And I think that translating that into modern times is going to be fun.
Again,
I think they're going to do it well.
Don't let me being jaded and liking new PC 60 frames a second games. Like, I just wanted to make that note.
If
I'm
you could plug an AMD Radeon card into this thing, you'd be stoked.
NVIDIA GeForce. What are you talking about? I'm excited for it. It's going to be a good game. I'm very confident. The style and everything is going to be awesome. People are going to be happy. So, Luigi's Mansion. The reason I was saving it is just like, again, from a gameplay perspective, and I've always been a Luigi's Mansion fan.
Hell yeah.
Obviously played the GameCube version a ton, played the 3DS version quite a bit. I can't remember if I beat it, but I always was playing it on planes. And so, yeah, they just did a great job with upgrading but retaining what it is. And so there's just plenty of puzzles like in every room, and adding now you have multiple Luigis to manage.
Luigi.
So you're managing physics-based puzzles, right? Yeah. You're pushing fans to try to get cages to come down that have keys. They've got hidden, you know, Easter egg type stuff that you can collect within the world. So there's just like a lot to do. And then the best part of all is just with all the physics, you'll do stuff like there's a ghost, you know, the shield, you'll shoot your plunger at it. Then you got to suck the plunger back. You pop the shield off. Then you
hit it with the light.
You blink the ghost if you want. That's the best way to do it. And then you grab it. And the new mechanic of you actually like
slam
press
it,
A,
right?
Beat the hell
and
out of
use
it.
The analog stick to slam it all over the place. In the end, you can hit other ghosts with that ghost while you're slamming it around. So it becomes just like a really good gameplay loop going room to room doing that. And like I know I'm going to have a blast playing this game. As long as it's not repetitive and it's clever, and it really seems to be, I'm pretty excited about this now.
I loved how tactile it all felt. Like what you're talking about doing all that stuff, it very quickly became second nature. And I loved how in control it really felt almost like rhythm gamey of just like the bop, 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 boom to get it into it. I love the character of the world. I love the ghost
so
all.
Pretty.
It was just so fun and weird and goofy and unique. And like you can just kind of... The way that they animate and the way that they move, it's like you understand who they are and you understand how you're supposed to take them down or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
like
it's probably one of the best looking Switch games when you think about it, right?
It's very impressive looking. I will say that the controls felt kind of clawy to me at points, where I felt like my hand was doing a little too many things at once. Where, like, I'm trying to, I would like the option to be able to change my controls so that, like, the flashlight being on A while also aiming with the stick and all that stuff. I was like, oh, this is.
I do recall at one point trying to, like, shoot the plunger, suck it in, and get the flat, and yeah, like, fidgeting. I mean, I guess I'm used to doing that for games like that, so I didn't think about it, like, playing Sekiro or whatever. But, but I think you're right. Didn't have enough time to make that judgment.
But that's the thing. I feel like thinking that's all easily. Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
I'm like really excited about it. Honestly, it's, again, I'm excited as much as anyone else for Zelda and Pokemon. I'm just more excited in some ways for Luigi because it's the type of game I want to play in Switch, and it feels really good.
Because the Mario
really
Bros are the best bros?
I guess.
Good bros.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with it, but.
When is that out? I always forget Luigi's Mansion.
They had no date yet. Fall. Okay. 2019.
October, we assume.
We assume October, but anything can happen. Real quick thing about Link's Awakening, it's Grezzo working on it, the same people that ported Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time to 3DS.
Oh.
And this is their first kind of like console experience. And 4A. Link's Awakening is like, sure, it's a remake of a Game Boy game, but like they're.
Training wheels are off.
It's totally, it's not just like, oh, I'll press it. You know, it's like there's a lot more there.
It's a full, I mean, it looks beautiful.
Impressive stuff. And speaking of Nintendo, this wasn't E3. But I've been playing Mario Maker 2, baby.
No!
Oh, yeah. I can talk about that now.
That came out in the middle of, like, E3.
Yeah, I can't give a full review yet.
Well, it didn't come out yet, right?
No, it's not out yet. Yeah. It's end of June.
Yeah.
End of June. Like, we're getting close.
Which is next week.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been playing a lot of it, and mainly the story mode.
Sure.
I haven't done any of the building stuff or any of that. But, man, I love it. The story mode, it did something that I didn't think was possible with a Mario Maker game, where it's like there's a gameplay loop of building the castle that I just get so sucked into. Where Mario Maker on 3DS, when it came out, there was 100 Nintendo made courses in it, and I loved playing through them. But really all it is course, you're just like going after them, and at some point you don't feel like you're making any progress towards anything. You're just beating levels,
play worse,
right?
Stuff.
And it's like, you know, in a typical Mario game, you're kind of going through the world map, and it's just like you're seeing things get ticked off, and it's just like a in your head thing of just like feeling like you're accomplishing something.
Oh, of course.
Whereas just like playing a bunch of levels is fun, but it doesn't feel like you're doing anything. Mm-hmm. The story mode is so simple, where Peach's castle gets blown up, and your Toad friends are like need you to do different tasks to be able to build it. You don't need to actually build it. It's just all kind of like just text based. They'll be like, oh, hey, I need more coins. I need this many coins to do this. And every level you beat, you get a certain amount of coins. Let's say you get like there's a difficulty level. So there's 5 stars. One's the easiest. 5's the hardest.
Sure.
5 stars are worth, let's say, 500 coins. 1 stars are worth 100 coins. But also however many coins you get in the level, it adds on. So if you do a 1-star difficulty level, you get that 100. But if you collect 23 coins in that, you get 123. You can then use those coins to talk to the Toadette, who is like the building planner or whatever. And you get to choose like, oh, start building the West Hall. Start building the main building.
We're building E3.
It's actually called that, West Hall, East Hall of the castle. Or like start building the second floor or whatever. You just like keep going and adding a bunch of stuff. Flower pots and like whatever. Once that job starts, every time you beat a level, one notch gets done. So like once you pay to get something built, it requires you to beat 5 levels for it to be fully built. And it so quickly turns into this thing. It's just all in my head of just being like, oh, well, I'm only 2 things away from this being built.
Yeah.
And then I beat 2 more levels and I get the coins. I'm like, well, now I'm only like 100 coins away from getting this next thing built. And it reminds me a lot
of
Metal Gear Solid 5, where it's just like
Mother Base.
Like, I don't need Mother Base. I don't care about Mother Base. But for some reason, they just trick you into getting in this loop where you're like, I'm doing something fun and I'm getting something for it. So this is why I play video games. Like,
that's awesome.
The gameplay is airtight, obviously, when it comes to Mario, and all the story stuff kind of just doesn't get in the way, and it kind of incentivizes me to want to keep playing.
Have you built anything?
My castle's almost complete. I think I'm like 90. Oh, no, I haven't.
Courses.
I've been strictly doing story. I'm not really the builder type.
I saw some article yesterday, right, that saying that when it's in handheld mode, you have to use the touchscreen controls to make levels or whatever.
Huh.
So they were talking about like you should get a stylus for whatever for your Switch if you need to or whatever.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Cool.
I haven't touched it at all.
That's fine.
But the story mode, the Nintendo created levels, I mean, I feel like I don't even need to say it. They are just, they're awesome. They're perfect. And every single one of them has some cool, unique thing. They're all designed to teach you the different things you can do in the builder. So it's like one level will be focusing on a very specific enemy, but doing things that you wouldn't expect that enemy to be doing, right?
Yeah.
And you're in there, you're like, oh, I guess like when I'm making levels, I can add that mechanic
really
to this,
smart,
right?
Obviously.
And a lot of the levels will have weird win conditions, which is a new thing that you can do in the game. In Mario Maker 1, you had to always just get to the flagpole and that's the end. And this time it can be like, oh, just collect the like X amount of coins, or rescue these toads and get them to the end, or figure out this puzzle. And it's like all of a sudden it's Mario gameplay, but there's a lot of just different styles that you can go into it with. One of the most interesting ones is you need to beat a level without jumping at all.
Oh, wow.
Or sorry, without leaving the floor at all.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, cool. Obviously that means no jumping, but you're kind of then running through and trying to use the physics of different things around you to move forward. So it's like you'll be on a falling platform, but you need to make sure that you're on the right part of it. So when it falls, it lands on the next thing to kind of move you forward.
Like mousetrap.
It's kind of like mousetrap, but it's like, it gets so intense where like you'll be in a part, you're like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And it's like, oh, I have one shot. And it just reminds me old Mario gameplay back when it was still fresh, where I'm like, I didn't know how to conquer every obstacle in my way. And I'm just like, wow, they're really, really, they obviously know this better than anyone else, but it's like making me look at the level design of just traditional Mario games and just being really impressed with the intricacy of everything they do. None of the levels overstay their welcome. There's a couple of them that I've been stumped on right now. Like I think there's been three that I'm like, I'm coming back to this one later. It's just, it's too much for me right now.
When you talk about coming back to them and being stumped on them, is it that are all 100 open to you and you get to go pick what you, which ones you
do? You open them up as you kind of going. Like, okay. It's
so the more you play, the more you
the
open.
More you play, the more you unlock. It's constant though. Like you always have at least 15 stages you haven't played yet. So it's like you're getting a bunch of new ones constantly. And it's so well balanced between all the different art styles. And all the different backgrounds and like themes going on, and like there's so much weird Mario Maker gimmicky stuff of like spotlights, or like the lights will be off unless you jump and then things turn on, or like the weird music cues and stuff. A lot of weird items that have never been in Mario games before. Like there's a car you can get in.
Okay.
So there's like a Mario Kart themed level.
That's cool.
There's like weird augments that they can do on stages. So like the Mario Galaxy music will be playing and the gravity's all off.
Oh,
and it's like, that's just neat. Like you're constantly just being surprised like and seeing really there's a lot,
which is awesome.
And the new 3D world style of gameplay, my least favorite part of the game. I feel like it kind of feels like an afterthought. The fact that stuff doesn't mesh with the other art styles, because all the other ones, it's like you can build something and then switch between New Super Mario Brothers and Mario 3. This one is a separate game mode, which allows it looks way better. And it allows you to do a lot of things like the car, and like there's a couple other exclusive items and gimmicks and stuff. But just the way that that Mario like runs and hits full speed and jumps and has a backflip and stuff, it's just like it's a little much, and I feel like it's not perfectly implemented. But so far, the rest of it is just like it makes Mario Brothers 3 feel fresh. And like that's insane.
That's cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Can't wait to play more. I'm almost done with the story, and I keep being surprised. Like I wouldn't say that any of the levels have been bad so far. So
wow,
very cool stuff. Greg.
Yeah.
Doom.
So we went to Judge Week. Mm-hmm. We played Doom Eternal.
We did.
I think we've talked about it before on the show, so I'll keep it brief. But during the presentation in the beginning, they were like, heads up, you're going to die. Don't turn down the difficulty. Dying is part of Doom. This is basically like a puzzle game in that way. You die and you figure out how to do it better next time. And when they said that, that clicked in my head and made me think about how I didn't play the first Doom correctly. I've tweeted about this since, but stick with me. Played Doom Eternal. Got my butt caked, wasn't understanding the platforming, forgot that I could dash for a second, and it really fucked me up. Eventually got on track, though, did it, and I was like, okay, cool. But having even that part where I was stalled out in Doom Eternal, we're like, how am I supposed to get to that platform before, like, 5 minutes later, I remembered the dash. Yeah. I was like, okay, that left me in a weird spot. Go to E3, go to play Stadia. Stadia is doing the Doom Eternal demo that I'd already played, but on Stadia. Sit down with the controller, start playing it, and now having remembered that other thing, now having it all click in my head, started playing it, and was having a great time playing Doom Eternal, never mind the Stadia part of it. And so, yeah, we got to the airport, or we're on the way out, I guess, after E3, and I was telling you, like, I think I'm going to start up Doom. Like, I'm going to go back and reinstall Doom, right? Because what had happened with Doom was it dropped. Everybody loved it. We got codes. I went and put it in, and I did the first two levels. And I was like, I get it. I'm not a shooter guy. This is a bro shooter game, the metal, and like, you know, running around and killing things. And yeah, yeah. I'm like, I get it. I see why people like it. It's very slick. It's very beautiful. It's very smooth playing. Not for me and left. Coming back and I played it on the plane on the Switch, and I was like, it's kind of hard to see. There's a lot going on the Switch.
Doom is not meant for Switch. You did the right thing. Play it on your PS4.
So I went home and reinstalled on PlayStation 4 and then spent all Saturday, right? Time's a flat circle now for us, I guess. Maybe started it Friday and then played all Saturday. And I had such a great time with it, and it was such a... Even jumping into Doom Eternal and then being like, you know, of course, you know, your melee kills are killing them and giving you back your health, right? And then the chainsaw is giving you the armor, and the fire you're using is giving you that's giving you your armor, or armor's from the fire, chainsaw's for the ammo. And so then going back and starting up Doom with that information and not having that until multiple levels in and seeing like, I didn't even get to this, like unlocking that next part. Mm. I never got to actually see the long division, right? Like, you know, show your work for this game, where it's like, oh, like I understood the health, obviously, of killing people, get your health, or meleeing them with, you know, when you're in the gory kill.
Yeah.
But doing that and then stringing it together and then needing ammo and then needing, like, okay, getting into that rhythm and that pacing of it in Doom. And then again, not being afraid to die this time, right? Of like, okay, cool, be on the move. It's like my same problem. I knew that I've played Wolfenstein wrong, right? Where I want to instinctively play like Division and go into cover, right, and like wait. Yeah. And it's like, no, you have to move in those fucking games. Doom for me, having to move, doing all these the kills and getting the ammo and like looking for collectibles, it was just a magical play session on Saturday to see it all finally click into place, because I finally got the right people saying the right things to me on how to play it, not just to play it, but actually no, this is what you are, and getting a glimpse in that demo of Eternal, because obviously you're starting in a different place with that one. I was like, holy shit, did I undersell? I thought people were into this because of the smoothness of it. I thought people were into this because of the precision of the shooting mechanics. I didn't realize it was the rhythm of the game, mm-hmm. and it was the beat of the game.
Rhythm of the night.
Exactly. And like, it's so rare for me, I feel, as like Blood and Truth, right? Love it on PlayStation VR. Had a great time. I finish a level and I move on to the next level. And like, I want a platinum, man. I want to go back, whatever, blah, blah. Doom is finish a level and then fuck, I didn't get all those collectibles, right? Or I finish the main part of the level and it's like, clearly walk through that door to advance the level. Instead, let's run around and try to get everything, right? Like all the little things on my map, because I want to upgrade my, you know, my Slayer a very specific way, and I want to be as powerful as I can going into the next thing. And because it's just so much fun to not only be a badass and run around and kill things, but to then go through in, like, you know, my Assassin's Creed Ubisoft mindset of check off the boxes on the map of all the things, find all the collectibles. So I've just been having a hell great yeah, time, man, with it. And so it's now got me super stoked for Doom Eternal, let alone finishing Doom proper.
Andrea, anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, one last thing I wanted to mention, because I know we're getting towards the end of the episode here, but something that I got to play on the floor at E3 that I had an absolute blast with, which I was not surprised about, was Monster Hunter World Iceborne.
Oh, yes.
So they had this beautiful giant snow dragon on the show floor in the South Hall, which was awesome. But Capcom, obviously noticeably absent from all of the press conferences, because they weren't really announcing like a big new game. And so when they reached out and said, we have hands on for Iceborne, I was like, absolutely, I would love to make time for this. So I got to play with Britt, which was fun. We were paired up with two other members of the media who I actually didn't get to meet, because we were already like customizing our stuff when they sat down. So we didn't actually get to say hi. But it was so fun because it's that Monster Hunter World gameplay you know and love, but better.
Yeah.
So they've made a bunch of tweaks and changes since the game launched last year. And what's really cool about what they're doing now is it's the snow and ice theme, obviously Iceborne, but they're taking that and really making it feel meaningful from a gameplay perspective. So for example, they've introduced a new consumable called a hot drink that you want to take on a hunt, because it helps you keep your stamina up in the cold. And the more snow accumulation you get on your character as you're traversing through these giant snowbanks, it'll drain your stamina slowly. If you don't manage that, particularly if you're somebody who uses either the bigger weapons, or if you're like me, if you're tumbling a lot, because I'm a light bowgun player, you don't notice just how much the snow and the ice and the cold affects your stamina. And so they've built in these other gameplay mechanics to kind of combat that. And then, of course, they've got the new monsters that are in the world as well. And the best part that I loved about my demo was the Trail Rider buddies.
Yeah.
So in the original game, obviously, the Palico system included those Tail Riders where you could kind of pick up a Palico buddy in the world and they would help you out in your hunt. Well, now they're taking it one step further. So if we went inside the tent on the hunt location, you would talk to the Palico in the tent and he would be like, oh, we've upgraded our Tail Riders to add Trail Riders, which is essentially a mount system. Hmm. And so when you're out of the camp area and you're in the world, like going on the hunt to find the monster with the clues, you can summon this trail rider and they will hunt the monster for you. And so you just jump on their back and they'll like run you through the world as they're tracking the monsters.
That's cool.
And if it doesn't sound like a big deal, you have to keep in mind, right, the fact of Monster Hunter, right, and what we did at launch when we were, 130 hours in, it is farming the same monsters over and over again, right? So it can get pretty redundant of, I'm in the same area. Now I need to find the right number of tracks to pick up the trail. Now my scout flies are going the way they need to. Now I'm going towards the monster. Now it can be that, cool, I'm farming Niragante, right? So I get the ride, get on it, and then I look at my phone. I do my thing. I answer an email. Oh, we're there. Great. Now I can fight the thing and go.
Or if you're like me, you're watching the screen collecting everything because you can harvest items also as true. You're on your trail rider, which is like game changing.
You can harvest. You can take your own. You can take your hot drinks. You can work on your menu, your inventory. That's stuff cool. Like it's a great time saver in terms of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. And they're really cute. And it was just like such a nice quality of life touch, but it also fits within the world because if you'll see the little monster that's your trail rider buddy, you can see that species in the world. And that's cool. Don't be confused. They're not all of your friends. Just that one is your friend. The other ones will still try to kill you.
And they added in the hook shot too.
Yeah, the grappling hook. So this is a really big traversal improvement and allows you to essentially like shoot a grappling hook into a monster and like kind of fast track
to it.
Yeah. Pull yourself to it. And if you have, you know, one of the bigger weapons that you need to get up close with, you can actually like swing and hit the monster while you're hooked into them, which is kind of neat.
Another great one of like, cool, I need to farm tails, right? Like you can run around its butt trying to hack it all the time and it works, so obviously, but this is a way better thing of like, I need that. I need a horn. I need to shoot and target right to it and then be attached to the side and hack
can
at it.
Can you push yourself away too? Or
no, it's just attaching to monsters. It's not attaching to trees or environments. Gotcha.
Oh no, yeah. I meant like, it's funny because Dauntless has something like this, I believe, but you can do both. You pull yourself in, but you can push yourself away with it somehow.
Oh no, I didn't see that functionality.
The same type of thing.
Did you play Jedi Fallen Order at all?
Oh, I didn't get to play it. It was just, man. Did you get to play it?
Before you guys move on to that, I just want to end with reminding people that the beta for Iceborne starts on Friday for PS Plus members. So if you guys want to try it out and you never played the original Monster Hunter World, it's free for PlayStation Plus subscribers this first weekend. And then next weekend, it's open to all PS4 players.
So wait, when people get this on Monday, though, what does that mean?
PlayStation 4
players. I believe it's still going on Monday. Okay. Let me double check the dates.
But otherwise, you can look forward to the, what, Bleeding Edge technical alpha is coming up from the Ninja Theory.
Yeah, so it goes from Friday, June 21st through Monday, June 24th for PlayStation Plus subscribers. And then Friday, June 28th to Monday, June 1st. I think they mean July 1st for all PlayStation 4 owners.
Awesome. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Kind of Funny Games Cast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Let me give a shout out to Riverbond.
Okay, go for it.
Before we go. Riverbond is one that was in the original Kind of Funny Games Showcase. It's that voxel pixel, like cubic. It looks like 3D dot Game Heroes to an extent, right? Dungeon crawler, run around the world, 4-player drop in, drop out co-op, hack and slash, but it's also got a gun, so it's like it could be shoot and slash or hack and shoot, whatever you want to call it or whatever. Like I said, original Kind of Funny Game Showcase guy. Played it with Jen, I guess all of Sunday, right? And it's very simple, and I like it a lot. But it's very simple. It wasn't like we were super challenged. I'd be interested to play it solo because I only played it in co-op. But it was an interesting thing of just running through these environments, you know, having different monsters come at you, hacking them with the different weapons. As you go, you open treasure chests, you get new weapons for that run. You have the gun, so it is a bit of twin stick shooter at one point if you want to play it that way. There's the different weapons have different abilities, obviously, different charge up attacks. Like I said, not that challenging, but enjoyable. You're playing through all these different levels and then getting to a giant boss that then takes a bit of coordination. Like Jen and I had pretty much mindlessly been running around, having, you know, talking to each other, beating stuff up, having a good time. And then when the boss got there, it was that he had a force field. How do we wear it down? Oh, charge up these things. All right, we'll start it together. And then there's like a countdown of how long that is, then go. But there's ads, you know, oh, res me, do these different things. There's secrets hidden around the world. Biggest problem I have with it is it's $24.99. Which I think is way too much for it. I would tell you to wait till it goes on sale. But I really enjoy the gameplay for what it is. It is super simple. It's not mindless, but it's just a fun palate cleanser. Where it's like when I was coming down off of some of the other stuff that you're ending the show without letting me talk about because you're rude.
Yeah, what we're going to do next week.
I'll be back then.
I want to talk about Stadia with you guys. Which
We got to get real into that next week.
Sure.
So much more.
But that's the River Bond update. Enjoy, everybody.
There you go. River Bond, baby. And that's Gamescast. Love you very much. We're about to get into the post show. Until then, I love you.